affairs will come to order. First announcement I'd like to make, committee, is that House Bill 2341, which is the contracting bill, which is first on the list, because the amendments, people have requested that we give them a little more time to look over them, that will be rescheduled. So I apologize to anybody who's here for that bill. And... Okay, we're going to open a work session on House Bill 3274. Have the staff read the summary. Call Karen Manger.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3274 requires the Department of Human Services to notify County Health Department of location of certain temporary restaurants and requires operative mobile units to notify County Health Department when unit is relocated to county other than county that licensed unit. We have dash one amendments today, which delete the references to temporary restaurants provisions in the bill and just deals with the mobile units per our discussion in committee last week. Thank you.
Okay. This was the bill about the mobile restaurants. So, you have amendments now?
Chair Coach, members of the committee, for the budget matter, Mr. Chairman, and representative of the county. We put this bill about a week ago, and there's some questions about the language in section 1 and 2 dealing with temporary restaurants. That language was not needed for the goal of this bill, which was to have the mobile food stand operators let the county health department know when they were operating in a county other than the one they were registered in. You asked us to work with the health division. We did that, and the cost of the amendment. Basically, the amendment takes out the entire bill except for section 3 dealing with mobile.
Okay. Are there questions from the committee? That looks very complete. That looks like that will do it. Appreciate that. Thank you. And Karen is the only one to testify on this. So let's send a kiss.
Madam Chair, I would move to accept the dash one amendment into House Bill 3274.
Representative Kitts moves the dash one amendment into House Bill 3274. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the... Oh, excuse me. Is there objection? So adopted. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3274 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 3274 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll. Is it excused?
Oh, aye.
Aye.
Representative
Brinkley?
Aye.
Representative
Shopper?
Aye.
Aye.
Representative
Rosewall? Aye. Chair Gould? Votes aye. Motion carries. And Representative Krupp will carry his bill. Close the work session. House Bill 3274.
Mary, thanks for your vote to move the University of Oregon to Boise. We appreciate it.
There you go.
I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3376. Call Jill Gilliam. Have the staff refresh our memory.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. House Bill 3376, in its original form, directed the Public Utility Commission to set a date on which electricity service suppliers and electric utilities must announce prices that will be charged for electricity in subsequent calendar years. Provides that the retail electricity consumers who are eligible for direct access must be allowed at least 5 business days after the date set by the commission to elect whether to use the direct access or to purchase electricity from the electric company utility. We have a dash one amendment which replaces the same concept, but it directs the PUC to set a date on which electricity companies must announce their prices. It provides that the retail electricity consumers are eligible for direct access but must be allowed at least 3 business days after the date set by the PUC and to elect whether to use the direct access or to purchase electricity from the electric company. And it requires all electricity service suppliers and electric companies to announce estimated prices that will be charged for electricity by them in subsequent year or contract period at least 5 days before the date set by the PUC. And it does declare an emergency effective on passage. Thank you.
Thank you. Joel, you want to add to what Megan has said about the dash one amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Joe Gilliam, representing the Oregon Grocery Association.
We trimmed the bill down quite a bit and tried to get right at just the basic points to help the consumers that are in open access be able to make a reasonable decision. Section 1, really have to listen to the testimony of the PG and PUC and others on the way it works around the rest of the country. We set this to do just that. The incumbent utility, if you will set their rate on the day that PUC directs. So the PUC will pick a fair date, say, this is the date you release your price. Then the other groups, if there's any other electrical service providers, can negotiate around that price. So PG is the flagship on the price, and everybody else comes in and tries to negotiate around it. The second section of the bill is pretty wide open, but it does, there'll be market pressure on prices. But what it does, it says all electrical service providers and PGE, 5 days prior to that date of announcing the hard price, that they give a ballpark price, an estimated price. And there's no locks or collars on what that estimation is. We figured that was too restrictive in the legislation to say it has to be within 10% or within 2%, or it's hard to pick the percentage on a commodities market where the price is going. So it says is you give a ballpark. It doesn't mean you have to sell it at that. It doesn't mean you're bound to sell it by it. It just allows the consumer to say, well, as we're narrowing into the three-day time period to make a decision, we're getting an idea of where the market's going. That doesn't mean that on the fifth day it couldn't go up 23% or down 23%. But at least we can start making a reasonable decision. And that's really the extent of the bill.
Okay.
PG signed off on it, and NFIB couldn't be here this morning, and they're favorable for the bill.
Okay. Thank you very much. Questions for Joe? Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative.
I would move we accept the Dash 1 amendments into House Bill 3376.
Representative Kitts moves the Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 3376. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would move House Bill 3376 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 3376 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since the PUC is here, could we get their comments on whether they're happy with this or if they see a problem?
Well, they had not signed up to testify, so I am assuming they are okay. You're not going to testify?
They're not okay.
Okay, you did want to comment. Okay, we'll briefly have you come forward. We are in the middle of a vote, however.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Roy Hemingway, Chair of the PUC. This puts into rule something, or into statute, something that a whole structure that we have adopted by rule that we're taking a whole look at. We may not even want to do this business of having a single day at which electricity suppliers and utilities lay out their prices. And enshrining this in statute puts us in a straitjacket in terms of how we are going to look at this in the future. We know that the current system does not work. We are taking a whole look at this current system to see if we can find a better way to do it. We don't think that this is necessarily the way to go with this because we haven't had a chance to look at it ourselves as a commission. And it locks us into a particular way of doing this rather than giving us the opportunity to look at the whole way we market electricity with a fresh set of eyes.
Madam Chair, for the record, Lee Beyer, Commissioner of the Public Utility Commission. Let me be a little more blunt and less political than the chairman was. I think that this amendment, if it becomes law, what it pretty well will assure is that you will not have any competition in Oregon in electrical things. Asking the energy suppliers to put their bids out before the incumbent does pretty well assures that no one's going to play in the marketplace. And I guess I would tell you that I'm not surprised at all that the PGE and Pacific find this bill perfectly acceptable because it pretty well means that they will have no competition and you will have no direct access. But if that's the choice that the legislature wants to go to, that's a reversal from the adoption of 1149 in 1999, but it's certainly a choice that you have to make.
Madam Chair.
Commissioner Breyer, I just want to ask you, if people are going to go to the market, they have to have some idea what they're bidding on, correct? And they have to have a time period to make a decision, wouldn't you agree?
Madam Chair, the marketplace that nationally people have been trying to emulate is the natural gas market, which does not have that contingent. In fact, the factor that adds competition is that a customer can go to a supplier at any time and negotiate an alternative. That's the departure from a regulated utility. What we're replacing with this is you're saying we have the incumbents regulated, and now we're going to regulate the competitors also. So you're, in essence, replacing a purely monopolistic regulated market with a multi-tenant regulated market. You're not allowing for a discussion, or you're not allowing customers to go out and cut a better deal, if you will.
Mr. Schaffer.
Thank you. Under the way that it exists today, has anybody chosen to cut these deals, have access to direct access? Is anybody doing that the way it is now?
We had a number of people who looked. No one chose. We had one customer, and we can't divulge who they are. That's part of the confidentiality. They took a look, but frankly, they couldn't get a deal that they liked. Partially, it's because the market is structured very tightly, and the transition costs, which we talked about at the last hearing, it doesn't work the way it's set up now. That's one of the things that we testified last week, is to say that we're opening this whole process up. In fact, we are meeting with, have a meeting scheduled this afternoon with NFIB and the grocers to talk about the prospectus, trying to make this work. We would like to see multiple opportunities for customers to make this choice rather than just one. You're right, absolutely. The market doesn't work this way today. It's not working. There are a few states that have made some attempts. It's not an easy thing to do. But to the extent, I would say that to the extent that you lock it all in statute, you take away any freedom to make, to allow us to try to make it work. If that's the intent of the legislature, is to try to develop a market, we need a little freedom to try and make that happen.
Representative Kitts.
I don't have a question. I'd like to revert back to the discussion, if we might, unless the gentleman have anything more to ask.
We're fine.
Madam Chair, to me, if I may be so, I may borrow the words of Commissioner Breyer, if I may be so blunt and non-political in my description of this bill, I would equate it to somebody punching me in the mouth and then wanting to sit down and negotiate. And that's exactly what's been done to the businesses in our state, and they have decided not to negotiate. I therefore will support this bill. In the name of better business and a more fair and equitable business in the state of Oregon.
Thank you, Representative Kitts. Representative Schaffer.
Thank you. Well, I may not upset PGE or power companies by not sitting on my hands doing nothing, because I'm going to support it too. But there's probably something else coming up that they're not going to like, and I'm not going to sit on my hands on that one either. And because I wasn't set, you know, everybody says, wait, need more time to talk about all these things. While we're out here going broke and paying through the nose, and you know what? I just, there's no way I can sit here and do nothing. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Merkley.
Madam Chair, I applaud the purpose of this bill, which is to try to help make regulation work. And clearly from our previous testimony, previous hearing, the system is not at all designed in a way that will work. I am not convinced that, certainly I don't understand the market well enough to know if this is the right answer, but I know that some of those who are immersed in the market are working to find the best way to do it, and their concern is that this would tie their hands. So while I applaud the purpose, and I'm quite frankly struck that if the some of the major electric customers who wanted this bill are now happy with it, I'm not sure that may be a good reason to go forward with this structure. Still, based on the testimony we've just received, I think I'd like to see the PUC have a chance to bring the best practices from elsewhere and continue the practice. So while applauding the purpose of the bill, I'm going to to not support it at this moment.
Ken?
Madam Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I actually have very mixed feelings about this because I think the PUC does make a good point, but I feel the bill needs to go forward, and I think if through the process of trying to negotiate some better alternative can be achieved, maybe the bill will go away. Maybe the problem will be solved in a different way, but the bill can certainly be worked further if that doesn't happen, and so that's why I'll vote to move it out today.
Thank you. Well, thank you, committee. You know, I think it's reasonable that our governmental agency, the commission here, sets a date on which prices must be announced. I think that's fair and equitable. So I think this is a reasonable solution to a problem that we've seen does exist. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Gallagher? Aye.
Representative Gerard?
Aye.
Representative Berkley?
No.
Representative Shoffler?
Aye.
Representative Kitts?
Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair Bliss? Votes aye. Motion carries, and clerk will, excuse me, the bill will be carried by the chair. We'll close the work session. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2433. Have the staff read the summary. Call Grover Simmons.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. The original bill deals with electrical work involving installations. We're looking at Dash 2 Amendment, which is in your packet today, which replaces the bill that allows the Department of Consumer and Business Services to issue a limited elevator maintenance electrician license under specified circumstances, allows the board to consider work and experience of applicant regardless of whether work performed with or without proper licensing, and specifies an applicant for a limited license as described in this is not subject to penalty for prior unlicensed work done, and it declares emergency effective upon passage. And it has a minimal fiscal impact. The original bill, that's it. Former?
Morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Grover Simmons. I represent the Independent Employer Association and two men who are involved in installing elevators in private residences. The staff is passing out 3 pounds of material, but the purpose and the goal of House Bill 2433-2 is to accomplish one thing, to ask the legislature to establish a clear legal standard and procedure which will allow the Department of Consumer and Business Services to grant a limited elevator maintenance electrician's license to qualified applicants who install elevators in private residences. This would be a new license. An applicant would need to do 5 things to qualify. Apply before December 31st of this year, comply with electrical safety laws, already have a license to do the mechanical work on residential elevators, have 2,000 hours of past work experience or training on the electrical side of installing residential elevators. That's about 1 year's work. And pay $50 for a fee for a license. If an applicant does those 5 things, then apparently the Electrical and Elevator Board will be willing to credit and grandfather years of past experience, even if it was done without proper licensing at the time. One of the persons seeking legislative relief through this bill is Mr. Ross Baldwin. He's had 19 years of experience doing both the mechanical and electrical work on residential elevators. He worked 10 years full-time and 9 years part-time in this occupation. He has owned his own business for the past 2 years. The other person seeking this bill is Mr. Jeff Nelson. He has had 12 years experience full-time installing residential elevators. So the requirement of 2,000 hours or about 1 year experience is no problem to either of these men. So why is the bill necessary? The answer is extremely complex. It involves a lot of history, including the legislature passing House Bill 3556 in 1999, which created a new license called a mechanical license to do elevator work. This allowed a person to do the mechanical part of installing residential elevators, but not the electrical part. The statute also directed the electrical and elevator board to establish by rule an apprenticeship program. To do the electrical part of residential elevator installation, a person had to have a journeyman's license. To get a journeyman's license, one had to complete an approved apprenticeship program. But there was no apprenticeship program open to independent, non-union workers. It's a catch-22 situation. Another complicating feature is that Mr. Jim Runyon, the state chief elevator inspector, says he has no jurisdiction over the electrical side of the elevator installations, and he could not issue a limited elevator maintenance electrical license, even to candidates with years of past experience. He said the applicants must go to the electrical side of the department and apply for a restricted energy license. He said, quote, "The division and the committee recognize that the statutory language in ORS 460.059 was limited and did not allow a person to obtain a journeyman license upon completion of an apprenticeship program." So it's clear that there is some shortcoming in the statute, at least as it was interpreted. Lastly, there's attached a long letter from Deputy Legislative Counsel Charles Taylor to former Representative Dan Gardner. It discusses conflicting interpretations of the 1999 House Bill 3556. At the bottom of page 2, it says, quote, "A person would be qualified to perform elevator work while training as an apprentice, but would be prohibited by ORS 460.045 from performing the same work once the apprenticeship was complete. A statute should not be interpreted in a manner that produces an absurd result when a reasonable alternative interpretation is available." Close quote. The problem of denying a license to a very few independent installers of residential elevators can be resolved by passing this bill, House Bill 2433-2, which creates this new license. It's called a Limited Elevator Maintenance Electrician License. I understand that there are 30 such limited licenses on the books already, so this is not really a precedent situation. This opens a window period for a few months for applicants to satisfy the requirements and be grandfathered based on their past experience. As I mentioned, the history of this issue is complex and involves lots of competing points of view. Mr. Mark Long, the newly appointed administrator of the Building Codes Division, says that if asked, he would be willing to testify and answer any technical questions your committee might have.
Let's call him forward, please.
He didn't say he'd be happy to testify, but he said he would be willing to do it.
Why don't we have Mark come forward in the interest of time?
To my way of thinking, a working man trying to earn an honest living with his hands should not be penalized when he finds himself bottled up and in the middle of some bureaucratic test of wills between the administrators of the Building Codes Division and the lawyers who interpret statutes. He also should not suffer because of the competition between union and non-union points of view. So I urge the committee to shine a little light on this subject and adopt House Bill 2433-2 and send it to the floor with your support. Madam Chair, there's one point I would like to clear up. Yesterday I met with Representative Merkley, and he asked me about the Dash 1 amendment, and I said, well, there isn't one. Last evening I thought about that, and I misspoke, because there is a Dash 1 amendment, but it is substantively exactly the same, except that the Deputy Legislative Council had placed this whole subject in the elevator statute instead of the electrical statute. And so the division wanted it placed in the electrical statute because that's the kind of license that's being issued or would
Thank
be
you.
Issued.
Thank
so
you.
I go back to legislative council and we got that straightened out, and that's why there is a dash two.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Mark, could you just verify in the testament it says that the department would have the discretion of granting this. It wouldn't be automatic, and they would need to look at experience. Could you discuss that?
Sure, Madam Chair. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator of Building Codes. My understanding of the dash two is that's correct. As Mr. Simmons indicated, this is an issue that's been going on since 1999, and this is one way to solve the problem. The dash two, we're comfortable with the way they're written from a technical standpoint. It would allow us to solve this problem as communicated by Grover.
And is it correct in your opinion that this just applies to very few people that are sort of caught in an interim?
My understanding is because of the grandfather nature and because of the experience requirement that it is, and I've been told it's actually the number's around 20, but so it is a limited number of folks.
Okay. Questions from the committee? Representative Rosenbaum.
So what will happen after December 31st? It goes back to the way it is now?
Chair Close, Representative Rosenbaum. Because December 31st requires applicants to come in, you basically have a set pool, and then through attrition, no one else would be able to come in and get this limited license, is the way I understand these dash two amendments. So folks that come to Building Codes Division, whether it be 5, 10, 15, 20, or 30, would be able to go through this process. After that date, you would not be able to go through that process. So eventually, this license would go away. As folks that had this license weren't working anymore. Hope I answered your question.
And the follow-up, Chair, I guess for either of you, have there been attempts to work this out that have failed since 1999 when this first arose?
Through the Chair, Representative Rosenbaum. Yes, we've... It goes back quite a ways. The bill passed in 99 had some conflicting language in it. It was an attempt to create a licensing structure in the elevator world, and we're trying to do mechanical things and electrical things in one statute. We found that to be quite complicated and not easy to get all the interest groups to agree to that. The division wrote rules. Legislative council wrote back to us and said those rules were in error. We got folks together. That's actually when I became involved, around 2000, 2001. We worked out to the best of our ability to follow that statute, put together rules, and in that effort, it left these people behind. And that's really what has happened.
And a final question, Mr.
Chair. To your knowledge, is there anyone opposed to this?
My understanding is there is.
There is.
Yes.
Other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to close the work session on this for now since we are missing one of our members. And I'm going to open a... work session on House Bill 3354.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, 3354 directs the Energy Facility Siting Council to inform applicant for site certificate if council may be unable to approve or reject application within statutory deadline. Directs the Office of Energy to contract for services to review application requested and paid for by the applicant. We have a dash one amendment. This was brought forth by Northwest Natural Gas. They're trying to lay a pipeline, and we have dash one that allows an applicant for a site certificate to request that the Department of Justice hire additional staff if necessary to provide legal service needed to meet the time period for application review.
Is anybody here to testify on this bill? Oh, Gary? Oh, all right. We didn't have our sign up sheet, so I thought you want to fill in the names.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Gary Bauer with Northwest Natural. With me is Mr. Greeny from the Oregon Office of Energy. Yes, the amendment just simply also allows the Department of Justice to go out and contract for services. Any services that either Office of Energy or the Department of Justice contracts for would be paid for by the applicant.
And Madam Chair, Mike Graney from the Office of Energy, just to indicate we support the amendment as well, Office of Energy, and I believe the Department of Justice has reviewed it and is okay on the amendment as well. And this would clarify our ability to deal with a workload problem that came up in the review of the pipeline that could result in an unanticipated delay, and it's a delay that we didn't have the legal ability to respond to, and this bill would help us do that.
Okay. Questions from the committee? All right. Thank you very much. And there was no one else with us, right? Do you want to move this one? Okay. No motion. We'll close the work session on this bill. 3354. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3460 and call Burton Wiest and Mark Long.
Morning, Chair Close. For the record, Mark Long again with Building Codes Division. 3460 is a bill that attempts to streamline and consolidate our board's processes. It adds a couple boards to the Building Codes Division. This is an issue that we've been discussing in work group for actually many years. The industry has, but recently, over the last month or so, the Dash 1 amendments we feel are very close to reaching agreement of a bunch of industries that Kirk can talk about, and we would like the opportunity to move this bill forward and keep working on the issue. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Questions from the committee. 3460.
Representative Close, if I may, Burton Wiest. I've been authorized to speak on behalf of Associated Building Contractors, the Oregon Building Industry Association, SMACNA, the Sheet Metal Contractors, the Oregon Building Trades Council, the Plumbing, Heating, Cooling Contractors, the Oregon Association of Air Conditioning Contractors of America, the Plumbing Mechanical Contractors Association, UA Local 290, NECA, National Electrical Contractors Association, and IBEW, to urge you to adopt the Dash 1 amendments and move this bill to the floor so that we can continue work on it on the Senate side. Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'd only make one observation. My first session dealing with building codes was 1977, and in that time I have never seen such unanimity, I can say that word, on a building code reorganization bill as we have here. We have some issues left to work on, but we have a general structural agreement, and all of our organizations would very much appreciate your allowing us to continue to work on this by adopting the Dash 1 amendments and sending this bill to the Senate.
Yeah, not in your packet, it's the thick thing on the
side. Okay, I'm missing it too. Excuse us for a moment. Okay, it's the big one on the bottom. This bill had a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and we don't have a fiscal statement, right? As such, we don't have the fiscal statement, so I don't see how we can move it to the floor. Do you want to comment on that?
Chair Close, that's probably our responsibility to get you that information. This bill, because of the reduction of the membership, because of the sunsetting of the Tri-County Board, because we've moved from monthly meetings to quarterly meetings, back at the office, we believe that this will allow us to operate better, and we're willing to give this structure a chance. And so I don't believe there's a fiscal impact on it, but I need to follow up on that. I'd be happy to get that to you.
Can you just, your amendment changes the bill quite a bit. Can you tell me if the fiscal on it has changed because of the amendment?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Sure.
Can you explain to us how?
Well, for those exact reasons. Basically, the current system is, to give the committee some background, we have a structural board
that is made up of 15 members that meets monthly, and we have a tri-county board that's made up of 13 or 15 members, and they meet monthly as well. What this bill does is sunset the tri-county board, so we reduce that membership. We reduce the structures board membership to 9 members. We create a mechanical board of 9 members. We create a residential board of 9 members, and then we ask those boards to meet quarterly. And the benefit to the division, we've had difficulty administering these codes because of the arrangements of the boards, and what this does is allow things to kind of be independent. Let's work with our separate stakeholder groups through these boards, and again, we think it's going to allow us to operate more efficiently.
Okay. Well, that clarifies it. Questions from the committee?
Madam Chair,
Representative Kitts?
In light that it may have a fiscal, I would move it, or move the Dash 1 amendment be accepted into House Bill 3460.
Okay. Representative Kitts moves the Dash 1 amendment into House Bill 3460. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair, in light of the fact that there may be a fiscal, I think we should move it to Ways and Means, and if not, we can take action further if it's deemed that there is not a fiscal, but in order to cover our tail in case without having to bring it back. So I would move that the committee move it, House Bill 3460, to Ways and Means.
Okay. House Bill 3460, as amended, has been... The motion is to move it to the Joint Committee on Ways and Means.
Given that we have one more day left, isn't it possible we could just get a fiscal impact back from the agency and then we wouldn't have to delay it and we could just send it on?
If we could do that, I would entertain that.
I think that would make sense. Otherwise,
I withdraw my motion until we hear back from the agency, and if we want to put it on Friday's agenda, I have no problem with that.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Kitts and Rosenbaum, and we will intend to post it on Friday and have a little more idea what the fiscal is. It looks like, as you say, there could be actually a reduction in money spent, and we will
hope. That's our hope. That's our hope as well. It's going to allow us to operate a little bit more efficiently. We've had difficulty, and I think everybody agreed the current system is awkward to administer. So we're willing to give this a shot. I don't think it has one, but I need to check with our budget folks to make sure. And if that actually probably closed the business today, so you can pick up.
Okay.
Thank you
very much.
Thank you.
And we do congratulate you on this work and trying to do this streamlining. And I'm closing the work session on House Bill 3460. We probably should give him one more call. Let's see if Scott's up there. Scott's up there. Okay. Can you say something, Alan? Okay, fine. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2447. Have the staff refresh our memory on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. House Bill 2447, in its original form, required building code professionals to wear visible ID tags and provide professional service. We have Dash 1 amendment that required the plumbers and boiler folks to wear the visible ID badge. It provides for a citation process for enforcement and declares an emergency effective on passage.
Mark Long was going to lead a work group. Could you sort of refresh our memory on what the issue was? Yes, it is. We had some concerns about lost badges and time to replace badges. That's what I had on my notes.
Morning again. For the record, Mark Long, Administrator, Building Codes Division. 2447-1 amendments are the result of a work group that we had where we were looking at two bills, I think, in that work group, and one we've already moved out where we consolidated licenses on the contractor side. The Dash 1 amendments clarify exactly who's required to have the visible license. It's intended for plumbers, electricians, boiler folks, and elevator folks, not inspectors. That was a concern early on. And that we put together a system that if they were to lose their license, they could get a replacement from the building code provision that's not contained in the Dash 1, so we work out a process internally. And the third thing we did was create a consistent citation process so that if someone did lose their license, that they would be treated equally no matter where they were in the various 132 jurisdictions out there, which, my understanding, satisfied the contractor concerns. So that's kind of what we did in this bill.
And Mark, does this cost you any money that you know of?
No.
Okay. Questions? Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. There is consensus among those participated that this works.
Chair Close, Representative Merkley, that's my understanding. I've checked as of even late today, and I've heard no opposition to it.
Okay, thank you very much. Is there a motion on this bill? Madam Chair, Representative Rosenbaum.
I move dash one amendments to House Bill 2447.
Representative Rosenbaum moves the dash one amendment into House Bill 2477. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I move House Bill 2447 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Rosenbaum moves House Bill 2447 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Representative Geisel?
Aye.
Representative Berard?
Is excused.
Representative Lincoln?
Aye.
Representative
Falcon?
Aye.
Representative
Kitt?
Aye.
Representative Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Chair
Close? Votes aye. Motion carries, and Representative Hansen will carry his bill. We'll close the work session on 2447. Okay, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3467. And the staff will read the summary, and the purpose is to refer this bill to revenue and not to take testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House Bill 3467 establishes credit against income of corporate excise taxes for wage increases paid by employers to employees engaged in farming or ranching when increases are caused by increasing minimum wage, limits credit to percentage of wage increases paid, and applies to tax years beginning on or after January 1 of 2004.
Oh, okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay, we'll take a minute just to... Okay, we do have a quorum, so... Representative Shoffer, do you want to make the motion on this?
Yes, ma'am. You want to refer to revenue, is that correct?
It has a subsequent referral to revenue.
Okay. Ma'am, I move we refer House Bill 3467 to revenue.
Without recommendation.
Without recommendation.
Representative Shoffer.
Pass recommendation.
No.
You can make that motion.
Yeah.
All right. We have to do pass recommendation.
Okay. Representative Shoffer moves House Bill 3467, just his bill, to the Committee on Revenue with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Rosenbaum.
Don't all speak at once. I would certainly support moving this without recommendation, but
I would have a problem.
Since we haven't taken any testimony on it, and I think it's a significant policy change. So if the motion could be revised, I would be able to support it, but not in its present form.
We've lost our quorum. We will stand at ease for a moment.
Madam Chair, I withdraw my motion with due pass and without. I move that we refer to a revenue with no recommendation.
Okay. Representative Shoffler, we do have some time in the committee. We're moving fairly quickly. If you would like to give testimony on it, I would allow that if you feel ready to do that.
I'm ready, but in the sake of time, let's just move along.
All right. So you've made the motion with...
No, with no recommendation.
Okay. Representative Shoffler moves House Bill 3467 to the Committee on Revenue with no recommendation. Is there discussion? Representative Merkley.
If the representative would like to and the chair would like to return to this once our other members are back, I'd certainly be fine with that. I can't support it with a recommendation, but I understand there are others ready to do so.
Let's just move along, Madam Chair.
Okay.
It's a bunch of...
Okay. The clerk will call the roll. Is excused. Is excused.
Aye.
Aye.
Is excused.
Aye.
Both aye. And motion carries. 3467, Madam Chair.
May I vote on this bill?
Yes, you may.
Gallegos votes aye.
Okay, Gallegos votes aye. Okay, and the bill moves to revenue and close the work session. Yes.
There you go. Yes, Dr. Lewis.
2824. Is she in the room? Yeah. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2824. Call Lisa Tressel. And the staff will refresh our memory on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee.
House Bill 2824 disqualifies individuals from receipt of unemployment benefits for acts involving alcohol, marijuana, or unlawful drugs for violation of last chance agreement. And some dash two amendments, I believe, are being distributed right now. Go ahead. Madam Chair, members of the committee, Lisa Tressel with Associated Oregon Industries, here in support today of the Dash 2 amendments for House Bill 2824. Since we were last before your committee, I just wanted to briefly indicate that there have been several changes to the bill, most of which were recommendations from the Employment Department or the Employment Advisory Council. But a significant change in the bill is that we had indicated last time we were here about the 10 days to get into treatment, and we've amended the bill to, if you were discharged under these provisions, an individual who got into a treatment program within 10 days of that discharge would no longer be disqualified. We'd also just like to indicate that we, under the where we outlined about the employer's written policy, we also mentioned that for collectively bargained would apply. And for situations that arise that aren't specifically identified in the bill, then those would fall under the current standard for determining misconduct. Thank you. Ask your support.
Question for Lisa.
Okay. Thank you very much. And where's the sign up? Okay. There's no one else. All right. Okay. Do we have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 28. Oh, we need to move the amendments first.
Yes.
I move we adopt the Dash 2 amendments to House Bill 2824.
Representative Gerard moves the Dash 2 amendment into House Bill 2824. Is there discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. Representative Gerard.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2824 be moved to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2824 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair.
Representative Rosenbaum.
I would like to thank Lisa. I know she's worked really hard on trying to accommodate those that have concerns about this bill, and I will be voting for it today, although I do have not been able to contact some of the those that were originally opposed, so just wanted to make sure that they their objections have been met. But I think that should work.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else? Question? Clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Aye.
Chair Close?
Close, aye. Motion carries. Let's see. Representative Gerard, would you carry this bill?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Close the work session on House Bill 2824. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 3354.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I believe there were no dash amendments. There were dash one amendments. I would move we accept the dash one amendments to House Bill 3354.
Okay, I'm going to give the committee a minute to pull the bill out of the stack. Get your papers in order. Okay, Representative Kitts moves the dash one amendment into House Bill 3354. Is there discussion?
Madam Chair, I thank you for, I guess I could be right to be recognized. Thank you. I apologize for the delay. I had some questions that I need to clarify before I was willing to vote on that. They've been clarified, and I do support the bill now. Thank you.
Okay. Other discussion? Okay, seeing none, the clerk will call the roll.
Aye.
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 Representative
Joplin?
Aye.
Representative
Kitts?
Aye.
Representative
Rosenbaum?
Aye.
Representative Close?
Aye.
Motion carries.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would move House Bill 3354 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Yeah, we just voted on it.
I thought that was the dash one amendment.
I think we
could. Where did you have my... Did you move with the names?
I'll make the motion.
Oh, okay, so we voted on the motion.
Yeah.
Okay, that's my mistake. I apologize. Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3354 as amended with a due pass recommendation to the floor.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 3354 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
I'm sorry.
Discussion. Clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Aye.
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 Aye. Both aye. Motion carries.
Sure.
Representative Kitts will carry the bill. Okay. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2577, and we have Senator Nelson here. We will call him forward. Good morning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of House Bill 2577. My name is David Nelson. I'm State Senator from Pendleton. I represent four counties, Morrow, Umatilla, Union, and Wallowa County. It's about 250 miles from one end to the other, about 100 miles deep. So it's a pretty big land space. And I say that just because it's important. This bill, I think, addresses a lot of those needs. Some history on this thing. Back in 1997, when I first came in the legislature, they didn't know what to do with me, so they stuck me on the Telecommunications Committee. And as the happenstance as often is, that has become a big issue for us in eastern Oregon and the whole state by and large. So, and Representative Lomona Zanis and I, we seem to be doing a tag team for several bills, but we're working upon trying to provide access to communications and access to all sorts of procedures and things that so the people in all parts of the states can have access to this to statewide communications. We did Senate Bill 622 in the 1999 session. That's just coming online. All of these things are connected with this. There's a huge group of people in this room that have worked very hard. They're involved as Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. We created that, I think, in the last session just to make sure that there's an ongoing coordination. And these people serve without pay and without reimbursement. They're very dedicated. They're very knowledgeable. They do things that make things work. I'll give you some testimony from Catherine S. Breton, who's the chair of this committee. She's a constituent, lives in La Grande. And they just worked tirelessly for this thing. And so what we'd like to do through House Bill 2577 is to continue this process. I think they're doing it in a way that it's not costing a lot of money. I think maybe there's $35,000 for staff members. But there's a huge number of these people. They're very dedicated. There's a lot of them in this room. And they don't always agree, but you know what, they get the job done, and they're doing a good thing for the state of Oregon. And you can read this testimony. I just think that, continue the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, very important thing. They're not trying to increase any enterprise zone. They're just trying to get telecommunications involved as part of something within an enterprise zone. We just think this is a good thing. We want it to continue, and so I'm lending my support to this.
Thank you, Senator. And Representative Moss Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. I really had a wonderful opportunity to work with Senator Nelson and his legislative staff, Alice, and have gotten to know the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council and have met with them a couple of times, as Senator Nelson has already said. And we really have a focus on distance learning. With health care, we really need to have a more coordinated plan between the university systems, K-12, hospitals, and this is a group that's composed, a lot of them are the techie guys, but what we've been sort of missing is having a focus on programs. And I think once we get them focusing, say, on health care, that we'll be able to communicate. I know that in Klamath Falls, their community college really needs to have simulation laboratories and distance learning for their nursing program. And the same with La Grande, as Senator Nelson has said. And this way, it's coordinating those efforts. I don't want to get involved in enterprise zones or anything. I want to have this bodies exist so that we can start working on decreasing or actually solving our health care personnel shortage, and this group will assist that. I'll tell you about, for instance, Communicable Disease Program at DHS has developed their own system. They need to be communicating with hospitals in eastern or southern Oregon, but until we have have everyone working together on trying to develop their network so that they communicate with others, we're going to have a problem with distance learning. And so I would encourage you to at least have this body continue. Thank you.
I'm sure if I could just make another comment.
Sure.
This is a grassroots effort. To go back in the history of this thing, back in the 1980s, they were trying to do things through DAS and through the government agencies. It just never worked. It took us, and it really started in 1995, or accumulated in 1999 with the passage of Senate Bill 622. And then this group has come in and saying, okay, how do we make this thing work? We've got this infrastructure in place now. How do we make it work? Grassroots effort. They're very efficient, and they get the job done. And I think it's a reliance more upon them as directing some of the policy involved and to keep them going. So I just want to make that point, that it's very local orientated. Government can't solve this problem. We don't have the resources. They have the time and the effort to make sure this thing happens.
Okay, questions from the committee. Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Moss Anderson, how does this fit with another bill for distance learning that I think you're involved in? I'm not sure how the two differ and how they fit together.
The other bill is actually directing, 3574. It's actually directing the OTCC to focus on healthcare and coordinate or develop a program a health care program so that hospitals will communicate with universities, will communicate through K-12, whatever the local needs are. So basically that's focusing on the health care piece. But we need the council to exist for them to focus on it.
One more question, ma'am.
Follow-up for Sam Merkley.
Senator Nelson, without this bill, would the commission cease to exist, or would it be able to continue to doing its work more or less as it has been?
I think it needs this bill to continue to exist. They would still do it, I think, as a non-authorized group or as some sort of group. But, I mean, they're working with the Department of Economic Development. They're very conscious of the direction they're going and the work of people. I think this bill is very important to keep them together. They can probably answer that question better when they get it.
Thank you.
But I know it's been very successful. And such things as the TESA program and the open network, all these things are connected. The TESA is technology-enhanced scholastic assessment. It's something that's very important in the education field. All these things are connected and related. And we've got something, we've got momentum going, we need to keep it.
Representative Gallegos.
Yeah, thank you for being here today. If memory serves me, though, the Engineering Technology Industry Council put forth an initiative that I think the legislature did. I mean, they funded a pot of money, but part of that was some of the private industries matched for some of the initiatives, and one of them was distance learning, as I recall, in places like OIT, Southern, Eastern, to create that network. And I think that is outside of this. I mean, that's a distance learning program that they're working on. Are you aware of that? And have
you probably could ask some of these folks here. I just know that there's this huge coordination. I've been to meetings where there's been 25 or 30 different interest groups just within the last month, trying to coordinate the healthcare, the education, the economic development. I mean, there is momentum in this group. There are some really good things happening here, and you know, for us to break that momentum, I think it'd just be the absolute wrong thing to do. We've got to continue to push this thing forward because we're right on the verge of getting some really good results out of this whole thing. You know, starting with 622 in 1999, we did the Oregon Health Science University buildings in 2001. This group is working very, 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 very well to solve those problems.
Follow up,
please. And on the second question then, in the policy realm, it seems to broaden and expand the policy. Is that necessary to maintain or to keep the coordinating council? Because there's in Section 21, there's very, well, I guess there are quite a few amendments there, but there seems to be a lot of broadening of policy and expanding kind of what the role of telecommunications is in general. And I'm wondering how necessary that is to achieve the goal of keeping the council alive.
I think expanding the role of technology is very, very important. I mean, if you have trying to bring business into the community, first thing they ask about schools, second thing they ask about is what's your telecommunications capability, what's your statewide process. The thing that Oregon has done in the last 4 years since Senate Bill 622 is we've gone from like about 40th in the country to almost number one in having telecommunications access available. So how are we going to use it? And this group, I think, is very important in making sure that is pushed forward.
Thank you. Representative Rosenbaum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning, Senator Nelson. Good to see you. I know you said that this wouldn't cost very much, but I noticed that the language is still in the bill that talks about using economic development resources to fund educational programs. Do you know what that would entail?
I actually don't. You'll have to ask some of the more smarter people here.
Okay.
To know those details. I had heard that there was like a $35,000 staffing position that was being funded. So that's, and I'm sure somebody in the audience can give you a much better idea of that.
Okay, thanks.
Representative Merkley.
Thank you. Senator Nelson, I have a engrossed version of the bill, I think, and it shows that part of the amendment leaves in consult with, advise, coordinate, give technical assistance to state and local organizations, including county, cities, metropolitan committees, so on and so forth, that are interested in obtaining, providing, or utilizing telecommunications infrastructure. We've had a situation in the state where sometimes we have private companies that are ready and prepared to put infrastructure into cities, and then we have cities thinking about funding and building their own. Is this bill essentially saying the state is going to enter into that issue and encourage cities and counties to do their own systems rather than work with the private sector to build telecommunications infrastructure?
Well, I think what it's saying is, what are solutions to these problems? And look at all potentials. I mean, there are some cities and counties that are involved in that, trying to bring, particularly in the rural areas. You know, the big companies aren't probably going to come to Wallowa County or Enterprise or Lakeview, maybe some parts on the southern coast. So, I mean, how do you get access to people? I think that's what this group is trying to resolve. How do you get the best services so that everybody can participate? And they're very good at answering those questions. Thank you.
Representative Girard. This is more of a comment, Mr. Chair, in regards to Representative Rosenbaum's question. The healthcare industry in Oregon right now is basically on its knees. We need to recruit, and recruit, whether it be nurses or physicians or medical technology. I know Oregon Institute of Technology in Klamath is at the moment preparing a whole new set of programs to introduce to go into this area to make it available to Oregonians. And telecommunications is a very important ingredient. We've had lots of discussions in Klamath alone as to the fact of how important telecommunications will be in the future of recruitment and in moving these programs forward. So this telecommunications is indeed a very vital part and portion of the whole economic development package and the helping, the assisting right now of our healthcare industry in Oregon. So I'm certainly in favor of this bill, and I thank the good senator and representative for bringing the bill forward.
Mr. Vice Chair.
I'm chair right now.
Mr. Chair, I think we have to realize that.
Thank you, Representative. We agree on that. Good to see you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The healthcare industry, we have a capacity problem here, and we need to be able to train more healthcare personnel, and therefore we need to have some coordination. We want Verizon, we want Quest to be at the table, and this bill will allow them to actually be at the table to work with it, and there's no way I want government to usurp the private industry at all, but there are some things that maybe we just have to do locally that isn't maybe what the bigger companies would want to do. And so I would hope that you would go forward with this. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And we'll call John Irwin and Kim Hoffman, it looks like. Welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, Chairman Close and other members of the committee. For the record, my name is John Irwin. I reside at 6570 Old Stage Road in Central Point, Oregon. I live in the country and I have broadband, for the record. Not everybody does, however. I'm actually the chair of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council, contrary to what you may have heard earlier. We have many committees that we've formed, and Kathy Britton is one of our committee chairs. And thankfully, it's through folks like Kathy Britton and others that we're able to have accomplished as much as we have. I'm probably visibly nervous because I am just a resident who has been called to this task. And 18 months ago, the council, for some reason, decided that I should be the chair of this organization. So hopefully you'll bear with me as I go through this. We've been 18 months in developing a fairly good understanding of what's going on with telecommunications in the state of Oregon. And I've been told I have about 5 minutes to distill down that information for you and to describe what is a fairly comprehensive piece of legislation. So I have created a very short overview, and I hope you'll bear with me as I go through that. And then I'll answer any questions that I can, and then there are other people in the room who can answer questions that I can't. Telecommunications is a very, very large topic. It covers lots of things, and just about everywhere you go today and you're talking to, whether it's economic development or quality of life things like healthcare or education, it keeps coming up, and it keeps coming up, and it won't go away. And we think that's a good thing because it's so doggone important. So I'm here today to testify in support of HB 2577. And in the interest of time, I will attempt to keep my remarks to the point, although I am brevity challenged, so you'll cut me off if it's necessary. In the last session, Senate Bill 765 established this council to study and make recommendations on broadband in the state of Oregon. The council, by the way, is composed of members from throughout the state. We're appointed by the governor. We're recommended by the folks in our area, and we do have industry representative on our council. One industry representative, Brant Wolf, and we congratulate him for sticking with us through this process. At times he may have felt overwhelmed or outnumbered, but I assure you that Brant has been a contributor to this process throughout. As you get later on into the expansion of the or the continuation of the council, you'll see that we're looking to expand the number of industry seats in the council. In the last 18 months, we've heard ideas and voices from everywhere in Oregon, from every sector. And our recommendations and all of this discussion has been made in full sunlight. Our report to the Joint Legislative Committee was published last November and has been out on the internet, on the web, and has been circulated, and we've received many, many emails and all sorts of feedback on that report. The council has been open to dialogue and will remain open to dialogue from all quarters. We take the position of and use the filter of what's in the best interest of the people of Oregon. We are not, as such, then a special interest group unless you consider the people of the state of Oregon a special interest group. We developed a mission statement that says that by working together, we can provide all Oregonians with affordable access to broadband digital applications that will improve the Oregon economy, improve the quality of life in Oregon communities, and reduce the gap between well-served and underserved Oregon communities for present and future generations. To study, for our study and our recommendations, our frame of reference was to consider how telecommunications policies might address providing good-paying jobs, improved access to health care, better access to government, and by being online instead of in-line, and even better educational opportunities for Oregonians. The council was quite pleased to find that a number of Oregon communities now possess high-speed telecommunication services, otherwise known as broadband. Yet we found that we still have many areas of Oregon that do not have access or affordable access to critical services. I work as a consultant in 7 southwest rural counties, from Lakeview to Brookings and further north as well. And I can, from direct information, I can validate that conclusion that there are still some areas that could use some additional help.
John, we, in the interest of time, we will need to
move forward
rather quickly.
Okay. What we found is that there, while there is this broadband available, there is a broad need that needs to be identified, and that's too many of our residents are not knowledgeable or comfortable with the use of the technology. So we see that there's an opportunity to provide further education to people out there, and that will help increase the demand, will increase customers, increase paying services, increase the incentive for build-outs, and so we have taken a rather private sector-oriented view, if you will, in this. Although we understand that there are some areas that may need to take other approaches. We did, in our recommendations, and you have in front of you, I believe, amendments that were just, I just received a copy of it myself, but we have tried to streamline what was the initial bill, and by removing some stuff. We have made policy recommendations. These are 7 guidelines in there that try to address where the state of Oregon should go and to address a question that was raised earlier. We believe that that an area where private sector can't justify investments, then the option should remain open for other alternatives to find those solutions. We found that the Economic Development Department has played a role in educating folks on the use of the technology, and it's more on the use of it. Once again, our intent was not that we should be encouraging people to get into the business per se, but we are very interested in people understanding how to integrate and weave these technologies into their daily life. This is an important factor for moving Oregon forward. We also heard from the telecommunication companies that the take rates are exceptionally low, and that is a problem for them because that doesn't help them with their revenue streams. So anything we can do to help those revenue streams is very, very important. So we see OECD could play a role in that, and what we suggested is actually a fairly minor but still significant role. There is a piece of legislation of state law out there already that is a tax incentive. It needs to be fixed because when they put it in place, they left out some very, very critical elements like the ability to carry that forward to another year. Once again, this is an incentive to on the supply side. We made some suggestions that to the PUC that they need to add some reporting on just what's going on in this area, and we've heard from the PUC that this will have no fiscal impact to them. We are not proposing expansion of enterprise zones, but we have found that the e-commerce zones have been extraordinarily successful. We've heard that folks are very interested in seeing e-commerce zones, number of e-commerce zones increased. Just in the city of Medford, this is going to result in an annual property tax revenue increase of $1.54 million and annual income tax revenue of $1.2 million, saving almost 500 jobs and saving almost 1,300 jobs and creating 450 new jobs. We've recommended that benchmarks be established for measuring our progress. We have a lot of talk about just how successful have been the ventures, and if there's nothing to measure against, how do you know what you've accomplished? We're recommending benchmarks be incorporated. And we also recommend the continuation of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. We believe we've just gotten started. What we found is that a group will get formed, and then it'll go away. And then we have to go back and relearn and create that knowledge base all over again. We've just gotten started this. We'd like to continue this role. We believe that we have an opportunity as a state legislative council and with that authority to be able to bring people to the table that otherwise might not come to the table, although we found a great willingness for folks to appear. Yet having that seal of the state of Oregon does help to move that dialogue along. I'm prepared to answer any questions you might have. This is a lot of material to cover in a short time.
We'll go to Kim next. And Kim, please do not read your testimony. Please summarize it.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I actually, John basically covered what my testimony was going to cover very briefly. So I'm just going to let what he said stand. But I would like to make a comment if I may. My name is Kim Hoffman. I'm a member of the OTCC. I'm the vice president of the Oregon Telehealth Alliance, whose intent is to advance telehealth throughout the state of Oregon. And in my real job, I'm the outreach coordinator for Oregon Health and Science University. I'm not speaking on their behalf today, but in my role, I can tell you that our community service mission is very important to us and is somewhat difficult to meet because of the technology challenges that we face in the rural areas of Oregon. I support very strongly what Representative Mona Sanderson said about wanting to extend health care and health care education as well as other educational opportunities throughout the state. And without the work of this committee, it's very difficult to do that because we need to have this coordination in place. We need to have the partnerships in place so that we can reach all the people we need to reach. Thank you.
Questions for the panel?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Can you tell me what's meant by using economic development resources to help fund educational programs?
Is that in, that's in the OECDD section?
Yes. It's in the amendment, too.
Okay. What we're looking from OECDD, it's hard to say that sometimes, economic development partners, is for them to, in a small way, continue a role that is, that was started in the last couple of years. I think it was started under SB 622, or in coincidental with that, I think it was their first venture into the integrating telecommunications into the economic development department programs. And what they have done is work with folks in communities to help them to understand the benefits of telecommunications from an economic development point of view. They've been going to chambers of commerce, doing presentations and working with those groups to help them understand what's available in their area. Too many times we find that folks do not know what's even available in their own town. And the chamber has, I mean, these folks, when they go to those communities, are able to help those sorts of folks, chambers and businesses in the area, gain education on that. So we're not talking education as you might think through K through 12 or like that. We're talking about educating other elements of the public. Does that help?
Follow-up, Madam Chair. No. Economic development resources, from what you just said, refers to private monies, not public monies. What I was asking is, are we talking about state?
This would be a state staffer that would go out to a state staff person that would be fulfilling this role.
Okay, thanks.
Sorry about the confusion.
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony. And we'll go to Brant Wolf.
Can I join Mr. Walker, please?
Yes, Mr. Dewey.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Brant Wolf, representing the Oregon Telecommunications Association. You got my written testimony. As you heard, prior testimony, I am a member of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. And all this work has been done in open fashion. However, the OTA is here to testify in opposition to House Bill 2577 and urge your no vote. The reasons I tried to enumerate in my written testimony, I won't go into any detail on those. You can just glance at those. If you have any questions, I'll try to answer it.
Brent.
Yes.
Since you are the first one to be against it, I think you do need to go through the sections of the bill that are the problem.
Sure.
I would like to follow that with you.
Sure, absolutely. You can answer my written testimony if you have that. Section 1.1 states it is the goal of the state to provide all Oregonians with affordable access to broadband services. We have some questions about exactly what is affordable. We tried to define that in some of our council meetings and could come to no satisfactory conclusion. That's a big issue to us. What is affordable broadband access and how will the state ensure everybody has access to that? Section 1.2F indicates, as we've heard from questions from some of the committee members, that economic development resources will help fund programs to train telecommunications technical support personnel. We have the same questions that the Representative Rosenbaum had about that. Section 1, subsection 2, G and H, these sections mean that apparently that state and federal funds will now be used to advertise and promote services provided by CSER or the local governments. That's just a question we have. It's kind of unclear. Section 2, subsection 14 seems to indicate that OECDD shall now advise and give technical support to government entities and others seeking to provide telecommunication services. I believe Representative Merkley referred to that earlier in his question. We have the same questions. Section 8, subsection 11, addresses the Oregon Public Utility Commission and their role as far as encouraging public-private partnerships and things of that nature. We have some questions about, you know, is it appropriate for a regulatory body like the OPUC to both regulate and to kind of encourage any particular business venture. Section 12 expands the makeup and continuation of the OTCC beyond its current sunset date to January 2, 2006. I have indicated in some of our council meetings that the industry through the OTA would be opposed to that, and we are opposed to that. And that's section by section kind of analysis, and generally you can see how I concluded. The industry and the OTA believe that this House bill places far too much emphasis on encouraging public entities to engage in the practice of providing telecommunications services. We believe that's bad public policy. We've long been opposed to this, and that's absolutely no secret to any member of the Oregon Telecommunications Board and the Council. I stated that on many occasions myself, and as you've heard, we heard from Verizon, Quest, Sprint, all the local exchange carriers, the larger local exchange carriers, and we've heard the same thing from them. And that actually concludes my written testimony. I'd be happy to answer any questions anybody might have or any concerns that any of the committee members might have about this.
Representative Kitts.
Brian, thanks for being here. I think both sides make very compelling cases. You being in the work group and being in opposition to it, you've lined out here what appears to be seven different things why you're opposed to it. Has there been any effort to reconcile these oppositions with the council, and just it's a loggerhead, you just agree to disagree? Is that it, or does it come after the deliberations?
Madam Chair, Representative Kitts, that's a very good question. As the chair of the OTCC, John Irwin, indicated, we've been working for a year and a half. It's been up, it's been down. I mean, we've talked about all these issues. I don't think it comes as any surprise that the OTA is opposed to these particular positions. I think the council, through Mr. Bill Penhollow, have tried to address some of the concerns, and they've done that in their dash ones. However, they haven't addressed all the concerns that we have.
Follow up. I would I agree with what they're trying to do. I also would agree that this may not be the best vessel, and for some of the reasons that you've stated and others. So at this time, I will not be supporting it.
Thank you. If I may, Madam Chair, we heard also earlier that that House Bill 2577 would just simply, well, maybe not simply, but extend the life of the OTCC. If that's all it did, it might be a different matter, but that is not all it does at all. As you can see by the bill you have and our comments, it goes way beyond simply extending the life of the OTCC.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Following up on Representative Kitt's point, I think the fundamental nature of the idea of collaboration to expand services to throughout the state is a big part of economic development for the future and of connecting communities with the modern business world where broadband is essential. And so if this does not move in the way it is, I would certainly encourage discussion to try to find that place where the group can continue the work in a way that's not prejudicial as to who does the work. In other words, the issue, some of the, I agree with a number of the issues that you've raised, but I also would like to see us encouraging and finding solutions to communities' needs to connect to the modern world. So I would encourage that conversation to continue.
Thank you. And if I may, House Bill 3574 that was referred to earlier, as I understand it, was amended, has some amendments that would extend the life of the Oregon Telecommunications Coordinating Council. And as I, also, as I understand, it's been passed out of the committee, I believe. So if that helps anybody, I think the council may be extended beyond its current sunset date, regardless of whether this bill passes or fails.
Mike.
Madam Chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
What was that bill that you said passed?
3574, I believe.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Mike Dewey, representing the Oregon Cable Telecommunications Association. My clients provide broadband telecommunications. The goals of the council are laudable. There is no question about that. I think you have to look at this piece of legislation in its entirety and the policies in it. And I'll go through just a few aspects of it. Before I say that, Brent, the next time you go to the meeting, you might want to bodyguard this thing. A little levity there, hopefully. The part of the dilemma we have with broadband telecommunication services is that people clearly want broadband. They want high-speed data, whatever, however we define that. The question is, you know, what is affordable? In general, cable modem service, which is a great service, is $40, $45 per month. For a number of people, that is not affordable. We get a little bit concerned when we look at this bill about, are there any subsidies that might occur, and where do those subsidies go? Because on page 2 of the bill, it talks about using state and federal funds to build networks. So we don't know if we're talking about private networks or are we talking about public networks. And I think we would all be supportive first of private networks. Now, we all know in certain instances, in rural Oregon, and Senator Nelson talked about that, there are going to be cases where the economics just don't work for the private entities to build networks. And we think local governments and consortiums need to take a look at that. At the same time, when you assume that there's not going to be any rate of return, there are going to be some subsidies in that particular network. And the people who live in that area need to know what those look like, because if there are subsidies, other services aren't provided. And so I think it's very important that there be tremendous communication when you start getting down that particular road. The bill is somewhat flawed in the sense, and I've only looked at the amendments that I saw yesterday. I've not had a chance to look at the amendments that were brought to you today. They may be the same, but I did see a kind of a hand-engrossed version of the amendments. It talks about expansion of tax credits. It talks about transferring of tax credits, and I'm not sure exactly what that means and whether or not when you do that, it's tight enough to make this work in terms of who should get the tax credits. Now, it goes from 10 to 50 million. That may be a change. I'm not sure. It talks about entities that are eligible for tax credits, so it expands that. And I think it's a public policy to take a look at, should those entities receive it. It looks in some cases that there are consortiums where local governments are involved and somehow they would get a tax credit. They don't pay taxes, so I don't know how that would necessarily work. There is another bill, House Bill 2300, that had some additional language that's in this bill that was deleted from 2300, and that's down in Ways and Means now. That deals with economic development. I sense in some ways that in the past, I think there's been some criticism of the Economic Development Department that their focus has been not narrow enough on creating jobs. And my concern is that we are providing new opportunities, we can call that, or new missions for in the telecommunications arena for economic development. I think that's another broad policy. The PUC has some responsibility here. The proponents say there's not going to be an additional cost, but they do have to report back as to some connectivity issues. So, Madam Chair, I would say that this is a fairly broad-reaching piece of legislation. There are a lot of policies here, and I think there needs to be more discussion. I will say, if I can be chastised here, I've not had the opportunity to have those conversations. We haven't sat down, and I'm not saying we need to do that necessarily, but we haven't had those. But this is a fairly broad piece of legislation. It's not necessarily straightforward. And the industry does support 3574, as I recollect in conversations I've had with my colleagues, and that bill does some things in the area of telemedicine, health care, and extends the sunset for the council. So this isn't the only vehicle to do that. So with that, I will be quiet, and if you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer those.
Questions? Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay, that concludes our testimony on House Bill 2577. I'm going to close the work session on that bill. Also like to announce that on our schedule, House Bill 3097, we will not be taking action on that today. Okay, committee, we have House Bill 3579 to take action on. However, Representative Kitts is presenting that bill. He's testifying in revenue. So we're going to take a 5-minute recess until he returns. So we are in recess.
Which one?
Come back to order. Committee, we have House Bill 3579. I'm going to open the work session on, and we are waiting for Representative Scott. And Representative Kitts is going to present this, and Megan will read the summary. All right.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Derek Kitts, State Representative for House District 30. I am here to testify on behalf of House Bill 3579, my good friend, Representative Wayne Scott's bill. Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Scott, would you come forward, too, please? Excuse me.
Lurking in the back.
Thank you.
Snakey would have bit me.
Great. Wayne, if you're smart, you'll carry your own bill here. Trying to do good things in revenue to enhance, and got busy, so I apologize for being late. Go ahead.
You want to state your name for the record?
For the record, my name is Wayne Scott, State Representative, House District 39. And I am here to offer support to the bill. Basically, what we're asking for is for a loan to be available to businesses that are currently operating based upon the intent is based upon the thresholds to qualify. It would be businesses that are ongoing and have had some success in allowing for that potential loan to be granted. They have to meet a threshold of revenues of $500,000 or annual sales, have fewer than 50 employees, and the intent is to utilize 10% of the potential funds available for that and for the bonds to be used. The fund is estimated at $3 million from the lottery, and it's directed to the 0305 biennium for purposes of making business loans to those eligible companies that would meet the thresholds. With that, I'd be happy to attempt to answer any questions.
Questions, Representative Merkman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Scott, in our previous testimony on this, the department noted they had a number of loan programs that were related, if not exactly similar, some of which guaranteed private loans and some of which were direct loans. But do you feel that there is a hole in the existing structure of loans that this is essential to fill, or would enhancing the existing programs do the same job?
Chair Close, Representative Merkley, thank you for the question. I had an opportunity to visit with Mark from the Oregon Economic Community Development, and in my opinion, it will fill a hole that is not currently available. I know they have a list of programs that are available, but in my opinion, this niches to a certain group of folks that
may or may not qualify under some of the other categories that are available, and it would allow very specific requirements that you could come in with to meet that requirement. And it wouldn't be taking any additional funds. It would just be reallocating the funds that are there.
Other questions?
Madam Chair.
Representative Kitts.
I would also just like to note that I think that any time, if we have the Economic and Community Development Department, any time that we're able to take state funding and put it straight back into the hands of our people out there that are trying to do what the department was designed to do, it's a great opportunity. And I think that any time any Oregonian benefits from something like this, it's creating jobs, creating income, and it's truly allowing the department to do the job that it's there to do. So I enthusiastically support this bill. Thank you.
Questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We'll give Representative Kitts a chance to get back up there.
We were hoping you would have limited his testimony to 1 minute.
I think he did limit it himself.
Well, it's pretty close to 1 minute.
Okay. Representative Kitts, do you want to make a motion?
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 3579 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation.
Representative Kitts moves House Bill 3579 to the floor with a do-pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Madam Chair. Representative Gallegos.
I'm just feeling a little bit remiss that we haven't heard from Representative Schaffler yet today. And I was hoping maybe some impassioned...
Everybody was gone when it was my turn to talk.
Well, you'll get your chance soon, I hope.
Well, Representative Schaffler, might your business qualify under these standards?
I'm not taking out any loans.
Madam Chair.
Representative Kitts.
As I stated in my testimony, I think this is a good bill. I think that it does provide a great opportunity. One thing that we can do to help stimulate our local economy, get our people back to work, and won't cost us any more money. So thank you.
Okay. Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I applaud the intent of this bill, and I'm going to support it today, but I wanted to note some reservations that I'd encourage the sponsors to continue a dialogue with the department about when this reaches the Senate. One concern is that if you take a dollar away from a loan program where the state provides a loan guarantee, you greatly reduce the total amount of lending that can be made, because a loan guarantee is leverages the state funds where it disperses them directly. My second concern is that since it doesn't involve new money, it does involve taking money out of other loan programs, and I think it's really important to line them all up and say, is this direction going to hurt the state in other ways while it's helping in this way? And a third issue that was raised in previous testimony that might need to be addressed is clarification on whether the interest from these loans would return to the fund. The question was raised that this interest might not return to the fund under the structure of the bill.
Madam Chair, if Representative Merkley would yield, I can answer
Absolutely.
That question.
Okay, Representative Kitts.
I believe we have worked on that, and it would. The interest from the loan would be put back into the revolving account. So that question from last time has been addressed.
Okay.
Thank you. So with those stated reservations, I'm prepared to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Look for a full call roll.
Representative
Gallegos.
Aye.
Representative
Merkley.
Aye.
Representative
Merkley.
Aye.
Representative Schaffler.
Aye.
Representative
Kitts.
Aye.
Representative
Roosevelt.
Aye.
Chair Close.
Both
aye. Motion carries. And
Representative
Scott, to carry the bill.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 3579. Okay, committee, we're going to go back to the work session on 2433. We had people to testify, and in the interest of time, I've held that over. So I'm going to open House Bill 2433 work session. I'm going to call Frank Regalado. Is that correct? Sorry.
Good
Madam Chair, committee members, my name is Frank Regalado. I'm the business rep of the International Union of Elevator Constructors. And I'd like to oppose this bill and hope that you would reject it. It has been a long-going issue, but there's no reason these people couldn't have become properly licensed, especially when they're claiming 19 years' experience. The fact is that they are fully aware that they have never been allowed to do electrical work. And frankly, I'm amazed that they come up and claim that they're doing this work when it's been in violation of the law at all these times. In 1999, when the last changes were made, it was to give them a grandfather clause at that time to allow them to do the mechanical work. And it was restated again that they were not to be doing any electrical work. So they were in on these committee meetings. And the rule writing for that, by the way, it took 4 years of continuous meetings. It was pretty brutal. A lot of time involved. At every turn, they were made known that they should not be doing any electrical work. And with all those years, they've had plenty of time to enter any number of electrical programs where they could have earned a proper license. So we already have an elevator journeyman's license to do all work on elevators and an apprenticeship program for that. And I do not see any need for another license muddying up the waters, especially when it's a group that seems to be more intent on circumventing the system.
Thank you, Mr. Regalado. The bill has been changed just to allow the department, the option. It doesn't mandate it. And there is a cutoff date of December 31st. It would seem reasonable to me to help very few people to give them this window. Do you want to comment on that?
Yes, I do. As I said earlier, they have had plenty. They've had years where they could have gotten licensed. They've made no effort. The fact is to do any electrical work, they were required to have an electrician do this work or an elevator journeyman. If they would have done that, they could have become indentured to the electrician and earned an electrical license. Instead, they apparently chose to do the work illegally on their own. And to reward them by manufacturing a license, another grandfather clause for these people, it's just not right.
Comment, okay. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Shoffler.
Comment on your comment. You know, there's any number of things I know how to do. I can build literally anything. And I've done years of flat work. I was in the labor's union, though, not in the finisher's union. Now, if my analogy to this, with all due respect to Mr. Simmons, is if I come in here asking for a statute and say, well, I've been a concrete finisher for 20 years, let's make a statute that'll sunset next year, allowing me to be a concrete journeyman, a finisher, mason journeyman. That's just wrong. If I wanted to be a mason or an electrician or an elevator installer or a plumber, I had the opportunity, and I still have the opportunity to apply and be accepted into an apprenticeship program. And the way I'm seeing that, that's what's being asked for here, is to just go around all that, and I'm opposed to that. That's my opinion. Thank you.
Representative Shoffler, I would just answer. In the testimony, we had a bill passed in 99, which created the new license, but then there was no apprenticeship program open to these independent non-union workers. So I guess I'll call Grover Simmons back up, and you can give your side of this.
Madam Chair, while you're calling them up, can I ask Shoffler a question?
Yes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, would it be different if you had been doing flat work and masonry work for a number of years, and then the law comes along and says, we're going to grandfather your concrete work for a concrete license, but we're not going to grandfather your masonry work? And if your masonry work and your concrete work were essentially so integrated as they are in an elevator operation, shouldn't the grandfather extend to both sides? And aren't you caught essentially in an unwinnable situation? That's what I'm wrestling with here. Well, when I look at these individuals.
You know, I just... I just don't like the premise to begin with. There's a lot of things about the process, any number of areas in this in law that I may not like, but to allow a certain small group of folks to just go around a process that's been in place for decades, I just can't accept that. And if I find myself in that situation, well, I guess, you know, some people may want to drive on the left side of the road, too, but they can't.
We'll go to Grover.
Madam Chair and members, Grover Simmons again for the record. Thank you for allowing me to come back up. I think it's useful to recognize that all of this work was permitted work. That is, over the years, the people who were doing this kind of work got permits to, they paid for permits to do the work. And the work was inspected in all cases and approved. So the department allowed this activity, this function, to go on years on end with knowledge that it was occurring and impliedly with the blessing, if you will. Because of the confusion from the 1999 statute, there was no apprenticeship program developed or for non-union personnel, and they couldn't get a journeyman's license through the procedure that was available to them, apparently through the union apprenticeship program. So they were, these two fellows that I represent, were in a state of limbo. And with respect to the number of years, my clients just simply told me how long they've been doing that line of work. I don't know them for 19 years. As a matter of fact, I wasn't even involved in this subject in 1999 when it was before the legislature earlier. But when they just tell me, well, I had 19 years experience, 10 full-time and 9 part-time, and the other one says I've had 12 years experience, I have no reason to believe that they're not truthful. So the work was permitted, it was inspected, and there's a, I think there's a legal concept of estoppel involved here, where the government allowed this to go on for years on end without doing anything about it, and they had issued a permit for them to do the mechanical work. They inspected all these matters, and now I think the government ought to be stopped from coming back in and saying, now, by the way, we're going to disallow you to be grandfathered, even though we've condoned this in the past for years on end. I think there's a legislative snafu. There's a difference of opinion between the Legislative Council and the Building Codes Division over the language of the 99 statute, and even as late as the Dash 2 amendments, when I visited with the Legislative Council on that. They say they're of one opinion as to where this should go in the law. The Building Division is of another opinion. It's a big can of worms. And I don't think these two men ought to suffer from the competition between union and non-union philosophies. Okay. Thank you.
Representative Gerard.
Quick question for Mr. Regatto.
Yeah.
And I'm getting a confliction, I think, in what I'm hearing both of you say. Is there an apprentice program for these individuals available now?
Yes, there is.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'm told there is not.
Mark Long indicated that there was a problem for these people. The agency does feel that there has been a problem for these few individuals. Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question to both of you. Up until the 1999 change, were these men operating completely legally in their work as elevator mechanics on both the electrical and the mechanical side?
If I may, Frank Regalado, through the chair to Mr. Merkley, before 99, and Mr. Simmons refers to the permits, they had to get a permit to install an elevator. That permit had to be signed by either a licensed elevator journeyman or an electrician, a journeyman electrician. So if they were doing the installation, they still had to have at least an electrician to sign that permit. after this change, and myself was complaining about them working as unlicensed at that time. So they were grandfathered in with this law in 1999, and the permit was changed, and there was now two places to sign for these mechanical people. They already made an adjustment so that the mechanical person could sign, but he still needed a signature from either an electrician or an elevator journeyman.
So your answer is no. Before 99, they couldn't do the electrical work on their own. They had to have an electrician doing it.
Both before and after.
Okay. Do you share that view, Mr. Simmons?
Madam Chair and Representative Merkley, I'm just not knowledgeable enough to know exactly the mechanical way that it operated. It might well be that they did have certified electricians to sign when a job was completed. I just don't know that.
I guess that would be a question for Mr. Long, who's not with us.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think we understand the issue. Appreciate your testimony.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Representative Ryan?
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the Dash 2 amendments for House Bill 2433.
Representative Girard moves the Dash 2 amendment into House Bill 2433. Is there discussion?
Yes.
Representative Schaffler.
You know, I haven't been here that long, but I have a real problem creating statute to that's aimed at of such a small number of people. And I mean, we had a plumber in here the other day that wanted a statute just to fit him, in my opinion. Maybe I'm wrong on that. But I haven't heard anything that showed me that these individuals had not had the opportunity to go and comply with the apprenticeship laws. And I have a problem creating a statute that's going to solve the problem for two individuals. I don't think that's what we should do here. I think it's wrong in any area, and I will definitely be voting no in this. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am, as with some other bills today, I'm conflicted. I think occasionally we end up with a situation that in the course of broad rulemaking and we get a very confusing situation that a few people get crunched by, and people who have made their living in a particular way, have demonstrated expertise over many, many years, ought to be able to continue. And we normally have a grandfather clause for that. In this case, though, and the reason I was asking those testifying about whether before 99 they could legally do the electrical side was essentially the analogy I was asking Representative Schaffler about. That is, if they had done both sides before 99 and only one side was grandfathered, that would seem inherently unfair to me. But from the testimony, it sounds as if they couldn't do the electrical side before 99. Mr. Simmons has said he doesn't have the background to know for sure, and the individuals who will be affected aren't here to answer any questions or add clarification. So given those pieces, I have to conclude that they were allowed to do mechanical work, and that was grandfathered, and that was fair, and I guess under that situation, I would lean towards saying the case hasn't been made persuasively enough to me that there is an unfairness inherent here, and so I'll also vote against the bill.
Okay. Representative Gary.
Yeah, if I could just say, I think I have some questions, just because I think what Grover mentions here in his testimony is the answer is extremely complex. This seems to be higher math that's going on, but I'm willing to, I don't want to stop the discussion. I think it's clearly there's people who have issues who are affected, and I'm happy to give a courtesy vote, make sure it moves, if that should be the case based on the other votes. But I wouldn't want that to indicate how I'll vote on the floor. Okay. I want to leave myself open for more information.
Committee, the reason that I am intending to let this go forward is because it is no longer requiring this. It's giving the board discretion. They can still turn it down. It just gives them the authority to consider the work and experience. And they could still find nay. So I think that is reasonable.
So the clerk will call the roll. Oh, I'm sorry, we didn't. We just moved the amendment. Okay. Is there objection to? Well, we have. We note the objections to moving the amendment, and that carries. Representative Gerard.
Madam Chair, I would move House Bill 2433 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Gerard moves House Bill 2433 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion, Representative Kitts.
Madam Chair, comment then followed by discussion. Did we vote on the Dash 1 amendments?
No. The Dash 1 is not in play, only the Dash 2.
The Dash 2. Did we vote on the Dash 2? Or did
just
you
now. Vote? You don't have to do a roll call.
No. Was that objection?
Oh, then I will follow that question up with discussion. In light of Representative Merkley's first testimony, as opposed to Representative Schaffler, I think he brings up a very good point, and I would hate to, in this day and age of very few jobs, preclude anybody from doing any work, and if we're able to help them do this work in light of what they've been doing, I'm going to lean and support this bill at this time. And I would hope that the questions that we have two very different answers to several questions. And I would hope that the gentleman would resolve those answers before it gets to the Senate and iron those out so that we do know. But I agree with keeping the dialogue going.
Okay. Thank you.
Just to follow up on Representative Kitts, we do have some people that apparently feel they are being treated unfairly. And I support the bill because it gives the option of trying to solve the problem for people who feel that they were wronged. And I feel very much that that is the responsibility of this body, is to right wrongs, if they exist. This gives an opportunity to do so. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Merkley.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to ask you about your comment about the discretion. I'm reading in line 8, she'll grant a license to a person who does the following. And then in line 20, the board shall give appropriate credit for all work experience. For clarification, what discretion were? It looks pretty crisp to me.
If I'm reading you right, Representative Merkley, your question is on the discretion of the board. In line 14, it says that they have to document to the satisfaction of the board that they have experience and training.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's what I was
referring to. I understand your point then. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
No, I don't. Okay. The clerk will call the roll.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Aye.
Representative
Berkley?
No.
Representative
Trump?
No.
Representative
Kitts? Aye. Representative Roosevelt? No.
Representative
Berkley? Both aye. Motion carries, and Representative Krupp will carry the bill. And we'll close the work session on House Bill 2433. I appreciate everybody's comments on that. I think that you have very good comments, and we will hope that the bill sponsors will continue to work on approving the bill. Okay, that completes our schedule for today. Thank you, everyone. You've done a great job, and we are adjourned.
Thank you, Meg.